Founded in 1729, Arlington Street continues today as a gathering place for progressive people of faith in the greater Boston area and beyond. We are located at the corner of Arlington and Boylston Streets, across from the Public Garden in Boston, Massachusetts. Arlington Street Church, gathered in love and service for justice and peace.
A quote from Albert Einstein. The most beautiful thing we can experience is the mysterious. It is the source of all true art and science. He to whom the emotion is a stranger, who can no longer pause to wonder and stand wrapped in awe, is as good as dead. His eyes are closed. The insight into the mystery of life, coupled though it be with fear, has also given rise to religion. To know what is impenetrable to us really exists, manifesting itself as the highest wisdom and the most radiant beauty, which our dull faculties can comprehend only in their most primitive forms. This knowledge, this feeling, is at the center of true religiousness. Here ends the reading. In the summer of 1774, Joseph Priestley embarked on a series of experiments that would forever change our understanding of life as we know it. Armed with a burning lens, a device concentrating sunlight into a powerful beam, Priestley heated a strange red powder called mercuric oxide in a glass container. As the powder heated up, an invisible gas began to fill the glass jar around it. Priestley didn't know what it was, but he noticed something amazing. When he placed a candle in the jar, it burned with an unusually bright and vigorous flame, far more intense than an ordinary air. And this was no ordinary gas. It seemed to possess a unique ability to support combustion. When he tried breathing in the air from the experiment, he said it felt very refreshing. Intrigued, he carefully isolated and collected the gas in a separate container, eager to explore its properties. Priestley conducted a further experiment by placing a mouse inside the container filled with a mysterious gas and observed that the mouse remained lively and active for a much longer time than it would in ordinary air. Priestley realized this gas had extraordinary properties that could sustain life and enhance combustion. Priestley's discovery was groundbreaking. Have you guessed what it was yet? The gas he uncovered was later named oxygen by Antoine Lavoisier, who also recognized its crucial role in fire and breath. Joseph Priestley's experiments with mercuric oxide and his discovery of what we now call oxygen marked a pivotal moment, laying the foundation for modern chemistry and deepening our understanding of the natural world. But Priestley was not only a scientist, he was also a Unitarian preacher. Deeply curious about how the world works and convinced that learning more about nature led to a stronger sense of faith. To him, the discovery of oxygen wasn't just a scientific victory, it was also a spiritual experience. Priestley believed that God had given us reason and curiosity to better understand the world, and through it, the divine. For him, there was no conflict between science and faith. Studying nature was a kind of worship. He once wrote that the more he understood about the natural world, the more he stood in awe of its creator. To me, the oxygen that Joseph Priestley discovered has parallels with Unitarian Universalism and what it means to live a spiritual life. A belief in something ubiquitous, but often unnoticed. A belief in that we are all connected, sharing the same gases, the same resources. A belief that the simple state of air in your lungs is the only prerequisite for equality. Plus, Priestley is not alone in seeing the connections between science and spirituality. In 1925, Cecilia Payne, a devout Unitarian herself, used the emerging field of quantum mechanics to reveal that hydrogen is the most common element found in the stars, and consequently, the entire universe. In 1989, Tim Berners-Lee invented the World Wide Web, one of the fundamental pillars of the modern internet. Tim is also a Unitarian Universalist, actually here in the Boston area, with strong beliefs that the openness and interconnectivity of the internet are very similar to the beliefs of openness and interconnectivity that are fundamental to Unitarian Universalism. See, science and spirituality are symbiotic. Without a sense of spiritual connection, science is dry and devoid of meaning. Without respect for science, spirituality is hopelessly lost in the dark. The scientific method is about testing ideas and reaching conclusions based on the data, which is not so different from what happens here, where we are each encouraged in our own lives to find a sense of truth and meaning. Joseph, Cecilia, and Tim are simply a few examples of this symbiosis. Let's explore two more. In the summer of 2018, I was conducting a fellowship here at MIT when I took a late night walk down Bay State Road near Kenmore Square. I was feeling lost in life and reflecting on my interests in sustainability and clean energy when, out of nowhere, I thought back to a high school history project about Philo Farnsworth, the inventor of electronic television and modern radar technology. Later in life, he extensively studied nuclear fusion, the fundamental process by which the sun and all the stars in our universe create light and heat. I thought, oh yeah, what was that fusion thing again? When I got home, I looked into it online and went down some deep rabbit holes on my computer, thanks to Tim Berners-Lee, becoming ever enthralled with the complexity and potential of fusion energy. See, fusion is the opposite of fission. Fission is the source of nuclear power plants, a controversial form of carbon-free energy. Fission splits nuclei apart, whereas fusion binds them together. They are literally opposites, and fusion succeeds where fission fails. A fusion power plant could never melt down. It would not produce high volumes of long-lived radioactive waste, nor could it be used to create an atomic weapon. And that's all because the physics is fundamentally different. Physics also tells us that a fusion power plant would only need elements of seawater as fuel. It would generate 4 times more energy than fission, or 4 million times more energy than an equivalent amount of fossil fuels, all while generating no greenhouse gases. But there's always a catch, right? The catch is that fusion is incredibly difficult to sustain. The conditions are so fragile that nobody has been able to create a working fusion power plant. Yet. I soon discovered MIT has a plasma science and fusion center just across the river here in Cambridge. That summer, I got to tour their facility and see the remnants of CMOD, their legacy fusion experiment that set world records for pressure and magnetic confinement in a fusion experiment. In 2016, CMOD was mothballed due to funding cuts from the US Department of Energy. Oh, how contemporary. Still, I was mind blown seeing this solar sarcophagus that has scientifically paved the way to a future of unlimited 24/7 clean energy and further unlocking secrets of our celestial formation. In the following years, I became obsessed with fusion, working with several fusion energy organizations, including the largest fusion experiment in the world, currently being constructed in southern France. And as I slowly learned more about the physics of fusion, the more I saw an explanation of what it means to live a harmonious life. See, fusion is the process of two atoms becoming one. In the case of our sun, it's the nuclei of hydrogen under immense gravitational force forging together to become one helium nucleus. Except something is missing. The resulting helium nucleus has slightly less mass than the original two hydrogen that produced it. So, where did the missing mass go? Well, physics tells us that matter cannot be created nor destroyed. So it went somewhere. But where? Fusion is actually the manifestation of Einstein's famous E equals mc² equation. Energy equals mass times the speed of light squared. Since the speed of light is an enormous number, any change in mass results in an exponential amount of energy. So, in the case of fusion, the lost mass is converted into energy in the form of heat and light. Get enough nuclei to fuse, 4 million tons per second in the case of our sun, and with all those reactions, you've got a star. But let's take a closer look at that fusion formula again, because it reveals something fundamental about human nature. When two hydrogen fuse, the resulting helium has slightly less mass than the original two hydrogen. What does that make you think of? For me, it reminds me of love. Love is often two people coming together, each losing a little bit of themselves in the process in order to create a new and powerful relationship. It's a sacrifice, but it's not a sacrifice for nothing. That little sliver of ourselves we must shed in order to love is never, never truly lost. When we love another fully, we get new energy for life. Those around us can feel that energy. They can see it radiating from you. It's the process of peace, of compromise, of unity. It's the very foundation of human nature. Social beings who understand that together we are capable of so much more than we are on our own. It's an equation for love, etched in the very fabric of our cosmos and in every fiber of your being. Fusion uses hydrogen to create every other element, comprising every single thing we can possibly perceive. We are all long descendants of fusion reactions forged in the crucible of an ancient star. In many ways, fusion is the story of where we come from and where we are going. So, oxygen was discovered hundreds of years ago by a Unitarian priest, and fusion as a clean energy source is being worked on right now. But what about the future? What's something we're barely even beginning to understand? It's my third and final theory of the connections between science and spirituality. In the spring of 1935, Albert Einstein was growing restless. He had already reshaped the world's understanding of space and time, thanks to his special theory of relativity. But there was something about the new field of quantum mechanics that deeply unsettled him. Like fusion, quantum is the study of atoms and subatomic particles, including the mind-bending ways they interact with each other. The math for quantum mechanics worked, but the ideas, to Einstein, they were too bizarre to be true. Particles that didn't have defined positions until they were observed, a universe run on probability rather than certainty. Einstein once said, "God does not play dice with the universe." He couldn't accept that reality at its most fundamental level was governed by chance and randomness. He believed there had to be something deeper, more orderly, waiting to be uncovered. So, in 1935, at the Institute for Advanced Study in Princeton, he gathered with two fellow physicists, Boris Podolsky and Nathan Rosen, to challenge quantum theory itself. The three of them wanted to show that quantum mechanics, for all its successes, was incomplete. They crafted a thought experiment, not involving labs or equipment, but instead imagination, logic, and equations. They imagined two particles that interacted with each other and then flew apart far away from each other. According to quantum mechanics, these particles became entangled. A mysterious link was formed. If you measured the position or momentum of one, the properties of the other would instantly snap into alignment, even if they were light years apart. This idea that particles are connected, no matter the distance, is now called quantum entanglement. The whole concept disturbed Einstein. It suggested that information could travel faster than the speed of light, violating the rules of his own theory of relativity. To him, this couldn't be right. He called it spooky action at a distance. He didn't believe the particles were magically influencing one another from opposite ends of the universe. Instead, he argued there must be some hidden variables, unknown factors that predetermined their outcomes. The universe must still play by rules, he thought. We just hadn't discovered all of them yet. The group's resulting paper, now called the EPR paradox, named after Einstein, Podolsky, and Rosen, was published in the journal Physical Review. It was meant to poke a hole in quantum theory, to challenge its strange implications and urge the physics community to dig deeper. However, the paper had an unexpected effect. It didn't weaken quantum theory. It strengthened it. It sparked decades of debate and eventually inspired experiments that tested Einstein's objections. And the results? Einstein was wrong. Entanglement is real. The spooky action he mocked turned out to be a fundamental truth of our universe. Particles, no matter the distance, are linked at the subatomic level. Even if they're light years apart and at opposite ends of the cosmos. Now, if Albert Einstein couldn't even explain why quantum entanglement exists, there is no way I am going to try. But I can't help but notice how this freaky fact of physics makes me think of politics and the fabric of human life. To me, it recalls Barack Obama's famous keynote address at the 2004 Democratic National Convention right here in Boston, when he said, "A belief that we are all connected as one people. If there's a child on the south side of Chicago who can't read, that matters to me, even if it's not my child. If there's a senior citizen somewhere who can't pay for their prescription drugs and has to choose between medicine and the rent, that makes my life poorer, even if it's not my grandparent. If there's an Arab American family being rounded up without benefit of an attorney or due process, that threatens my civil liberties." Oh, I miss Barack. We are all connected as one people. What happens to you, what you are going through, what you are experiencing, impacts me. I believe it shows that what binds us is far more powerful than what divides us. Quantum physics teaches us that we are entangled, some way, somehow. It shows that our cosmos is a beautiful web of interconnectedness. We have the math to prove it, but we don't know why it is the way it is. We are still learning fundamental truths about our very existence. What I love about science is that it reveals the lines of truth and the limits of our understanding. What I love about spirituality is that we get to color everything in between. We get to create meaning with what we are given. Let us choose to revel in awe of it all. So join me in taking a deep breath of air in ode to Joseph Priestley. Look down at your hands and body composed of atoms fused in the fiery core of an ancient star. And feel how those particles are entangled with the people beside you, those on the other side of the world, and in elements of far off galaxies, deep, deep, deep in the cosmos. Breathe in. Breathe out. Blessed be. And now for our benediction, I invite you to put your hands over your heart as we see the divine in each other. In the words of Carl Sagan, the cosmos is within us. We are made of star stuff. We are a way for the universe to know itself. Let us keep this faith, beloveds, and pass it on. The service begins when the service ends. Bless your hearts. Amen.
Where you go, I will go, beloved. Where you go, I will go. will go, beloved. Where you go, I will go. For your people are my people. Your people are mine. Your people are my people. Your divine, my divine.
We are located at the corner of Arlington and Boylston Streets, across from the Public Garden in Boston, Massachusetts. Arlington Street Church, gathered in love and service for justice and peace.